you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. Big show this week. Comedian Pete Holmes, you know him from the TV show Crashing. Big J was on Crashing, so they get to catch up with that. And just a really funny guy. Pete also has a podcast called You Made It Weird and a brand new book called Comedy, Sex, God. Just a super great guy all around. And don't forget, if you're a fan of Pete Holmes, you could have heard the show 5 days ago, commercial free. If you subscribe at gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR, get 20% off early episodes, commercial free, HD, live chat, 22 other shows, and you're supporting the network. What a great way to do it. But if you don't want to, that's fine. Just spread the word of the show. That's all we care about. We do it every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and then immediately on Gas Digital, and then 5 days later, anywhere you listen to podcasts, and youtube.com/the SDR show. Here it is right now, the Pete Holmes episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton, back once again with me, Mr. Big J. Okerson, in his far better room and better sounding mic and better headphones and everything. How are you, buddy?
Right. You're making like everything was terrible.
It used to be terrible. Now it's great. You sound professional. Shannon is with us and now very excited to have who just fixed his name to Petey Pants.
Yeah, there you go.
It is Pete Holmes. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm glad to meet you. And it's nice to see you, Jay and Shannon. Make sure I like Zoom that you can just mouse over them and see their names. I like this.
Yeah. My gallery view, the names stay up the whole time. So if you do gallery view.
Ooh, see, that's what SDR podcast sounds like. SDR sounds like some sort of cable. Like we discuss cables.
It really does.
You got
yeah.
the SDR cable. You got the DMT. I can't think of something that's not
you really
a drug
seem like you know your technology, Pete, right off the bat.
No, I started to say DMX and then I changed it to DMT. Try one that's not taken.
Could Both have been were wrong.
DMB is also taken. Dave Matthews Band, guys.
Wow,
don't act like
really,
you don't remember DMB.
I don't think anyone in the last 20 years have ever referred to them as the DMB.
Oh, well, that's not true. I do a show with Dan Soder, and Dan Soder is all about DMB.
No, I don't believe that. It's such a white band. Is he? I guess he is. Soder is very into that, I would imagine. What do I know?
Yeah, Soder's
very
white.
Does he still like them?
He doesn't hate them. If you were in college at the time of Dave Matthews Band, I could see getting into them. It's like the
What's that?
Maybe the dog sees the cat
it's in
on
my
the screen.
Pants hanging on the wherever my pants are.
Sorry. Well, I don't know. By the way, I don't know what the question was, but the answer it was in my. It's in my pants.
It's in my pants. I'm not doing one of those jerk pods. I told you never again.
Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. Put it back in your pants.
She's looking for my wallet.
Are you in L.A.?
I don't know why. That's just a minute. I'm in LA. I just started to think what she might need. Our baby hasn't been feeling well. I was up all night. It was really, really rough. Jay, I know you have a daughter, and it was just one of those. Like, she had like almost like demonic strength where we're trying to hold her, and she was just Hulk smashing her way out of our embrace, so much so that it was like dangerous to her, where she's like I mean, it was like the poster for Mr. Mom, you know what I mean? Like, it was
trying to escape
sleep, and then the only time that she will sleep now is if I sleep with her on the couch, so like I get couch sleep, which we all know is not real sleep.
How old is she?
She's 12. That's such a standard joke form. She's 2. And you should see the women. I don't mind a standard joke. She's 2 years old.
You want me to make you feel old and date us all? My daughter is 18.
Wow.
In college.
I imagine she had to have been. We knew each other a really long time ago.
Yeah.
Little baby Nate Bargatze.
Yep.
Your little crew. Jay used to hold court I mean, obviously we would. I would still listen to Jay Holdcourt, but this was like at a time when someone who was working the cellar and somebody that could just come to the Boston and go up. This was like our Elvis, you know. It was a really big deal.
So Jay was the like, I guess to Jay who looks up to the comics. Like he was the one that made it first amongst the crew. Is that right?
No,
I was a little bit. I was doing it a little bit longer in New York. Yeah. I don't know how much if I was doing it longer, but I was in New York a little bit longer than some of the guys who I became. Even with like Lewis and Dave, Nate, and everything. So they were like younger guys coming up and seeing that. And it's funny. It was and Pete wrote me into to Crashing on HBO basically as myself.
Yeah, because well, that's who
I was
going
to ask you about.
Yeah.
Were you excited that you did you get to boss Jay around a little bit on set or anything like that, or I mean, it would make a lot of people really happy? God.
Those were fun shoots.
This sounds like such a, like I'm dodging that I was truly like a monster or something. But I would want people like Jay and people that I knew on the show because it's so, it's a drag. I don't mean it's bad. I just mean it's a long, dragging thing to make a TV show. And if you see faces that you know, that's so fun. And you get to riff around and play around. But also, you're reenacting so often things that were actually with that person.
Yeah.
And my character was pretty easy. Like, I sometimes joke that he was sort of the narrator. You know, like, which would be a great way to burn me. It'd be like, Pete wrote his own show, and he made himself the narrator.
The narrator.
But, like, that's what it felt like doing comedy at that time. I have so many fond Big J memories. Like, I remember Bill Burr. And this was all in love, but like Patrice and these greats would like make fun of me, not in a bad way. But then like there was this one time Bill Burr, who was not yet Bill Burr. This is sure. Like 15 years ago. He wasn't Billy Burr. There was a time when he was Billy Burr.
Yeah.
And he sort of worked the black rooms and he had a different thing going. And then he dropped the Billy and he started headlining. I remember telling Jim Gaffigan in like 2004
when Jimmy Gaffigan
working the black circuit. No, he was working the Cracker Barrel circuit. He was huge. I told Jim Gaffigan in front of the Comedy Cellar that I had just been in Peoria, Illinois, opening for Bill Burr, and that Bill Burr was headlining. And Jim Gaffigan went, Billy Burr? You couldn't believe that Bill Burr was headlining somewhere. This is how long ago this was. But he was still a king of the scene, and he was still the funniest guy. Like, just so fucking funny. But not just on stage. He could kill off stage, just making everybody die and being really mean in a really funny way. So he was making fun of me. Bill used to, like, do that really horrible thing in front of the cellar where I would say something stupid because I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to be a part. So I'd be like, more like a tuna melt or something. I don't know what I'm doing. And Bill would wait for everyone to stop talking, sometimes 10 minutes, to re-bring up what I said so he could make fun of it. He'd be like, no, this guy said tuna melt. No, we're going back. We're going back. And then, like, re-humiliate me. But then we're in the upstairs at the cellar, and Bill is breaking my balls. And Jay was always like, this isn't a fat joke, but you were always like the whale that I would travel in on, like a barnacle. Sure. Like, I just hid in your shadow, and you were a big presence, so I would get in the cellar somehow and sit at the table. Like, I'd sit at the adjacent table. I wouldn't sit at the table. But I always kind of came in on your credit. And then Bill is making fun of me. Do you remember this, Jay? He's making fun of me. And I had just done Best Week Ever. Mm-hmm. And I had just done Premium Blend. And it happened in the same week. So I went from a guy handing out flyers to overnight, literally overnight. I was still barking. I was still paying my dues. But I suddenly had two credits. It was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's a big deal.
It was a really big deal. And it really happened overnight because Best Week Ever aired that Friday. And the Premium Blend probably aired that Saturday or something. So it was like one weekend, two TV credits, big deal. And Bill's going at me. And Bill doesn't know this. Why would he? He still doesn't know this. And Jay goes, easy, Bill. Pete's got more credits than you now. And I was like, no, don't do this. It's like, this is not my observation, but it's like when someone, when your partner shushes loud people at the movie theater, or when someone honks your horn for you, it's like, no, I don't want to engage. I like being a quiet car. I know he cut me off, but you don't have to lean over and honk for me. That's what you were doing.
Yeah, my girlfriend, a girl I was dating years ago, we were in a car and she gave a middle finger to the car next to us and totally got us into almost a fight that I did not want to be in.
Getting into
that exact thing.
Pete, poor Pete, by the way, as a young comic in the city, I was taking around, and I Pete was such a sweetheart of a guy, and also at the time particularly so straight and narrow on like his thing. He wasn't like a party guy, he was married, religious, hilarious, and so I enjoyed hanging.
Well, that's
no,
generous.
No, no. I'm saying I still remember your jokes from that time when we would go do like Lewis's shows.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, that's you did hilarious. Lewis's show. So when Lewis was would put shows together.
Lewis used to be doing a show at a place called Dylan's.
Yeah, I know Lewis as a producer, a very nice producer who did stand up and was very funny. And I'm not just saying that in hindsight. He was too good to be a producer. But usually comedians that produced at that time, especially, were always kind of like another class. It's like we're elves and you're like a dwarf or something. Like you're something else.
Lewis used to run the show. First of all, it was a place called Dylan's. They had a really cool back area. What was funny about Dylan's was Lewis and his flock, his Manson family of ticket sales people, they would all just hang there. And because they put on shows there, they could eat for free. So they would all these like derelict kids and Lewis and them would eat food at this. It was an Indian restaurant all the time.
In Manhattan,
in Manhattan? Yeah,
It was on like Kitchen. There's some show like Kitchen Rebate.
That's what I was going to say. So then it was huge. It comes out. It was like episode 3 ever of season 1 of Kitchen Nightmares with Gordon Ramsay.
Kitchen Nightmares.
And a place, and we watched it. We all watched it with a thing. And Lewis and Dave sitting there and watching the show, like when the guy, like, he touches like the gasket of the refrigerator and 1,000 roaches run out. There's all things like they're serving chicken as turkey when it changes colors and all this kind of weird shit. And they were like, we ate there every single night. And they were just eating poison, it turns out, completely.
I want to think I never ate at Dylan's. I never ate at Dylan's.
I don't think I did either.
I remember that was one of the riffs about you. Who said this, that you're like, you were not a fun, they would say fat guy. I would say you're not a fun soft guy. Right. Meaning you never eat.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be, it's ritualistic. It has to be in front of my television doing my own thing. And I never wanted to, like, I would get angry. People always make fun of me now for, like, you know, it's also, again, young comics who, as they move on and become professionals and fathers and friends and adults, really, it's funny to go in hindsight. Lewis, I have that a lot with the retelling of an old thing that I thought was one way and it's another. Like, I always, one of the most recent ones, I go, man, guys, remember how much we just loved Guitar Hero and we would play Guitar Hero for hours on end? And they were like, you loved Guitar Hero, and we were too young of comics to tell you we didn't really give a shit about Guitar Hero.
Oh, like, my God.
I thought
God.
We were all loving it together.
Do you have a thing, Jay, where you don't want to eat a lot in front of other people just because you feel like it's expected of you?
Nope. It's nothing to do with that, honestly. It's my own ritualistic. I like to... That's what I changed as I got older. I try not to make it so, like, every meal has to be this, like, look forward to thing that you're like, ooh... Later on tonight, they would discuss that too. They're like, remember we'd be out and want to eat, and Jay'd be like, no, we're getting Taco Bell at 2 a.m. and going back to my place. And they're like, okay. They're like, can we eat some in the car? We're starving. I'm like, no, we have to wait till we put on the perfect episode of Always Sunny or something.
It adds to the hypnosis. I'm not even saying that in a judging way, but I like eating in front of the TV too, and it's because you have a chance to eat more before you know you're full because you're too busy watching
the TV.
You're
locked in.
And if you like, by the way, I'm aware that this sounds like a problem. It may be. But like if you like eating and if your 2-year-old kept you up all night and you really just want to eat that meal, the TV is there to be like, just watch the flashing lights. Like we're just wolves. You realize that? We're wolves looking at the moon while we eat the carcass. That's all that's happening.
Pete, I just want to tell you two things I found out in doing a little research on you. One was surprising that you're going to be in apparently this is two-part surprising. One, I didn't realize there were 6 versions of this. And two, that you're going to be in it. The reboot of Home Alone. I didn't know there were six Home Alones. That's fucking crazy.
I didn't know either. There's like a Home Alone. Like, my wife loves Home Alone, and she loves Home Alone 3. And I'm like, what is this, a bit? Is this a bit? Like, I didn't know there was a Home Alone 3, but it's the kid from Liar Liar. Remember the cutie pants from Liar Liar? He becomes the Macaulay, and he's left home alone. And I believe burglars come and run amok. And I know I'm not supposed to talk about the new one, but it's meaning the specifics, but it's different. I know from my involvement in it that it's not just Joe Pesci.
Right, and it's a reboot of some, but it's somehow, because they said it's the sixth installment. I was like, I knew of two. I didn't know there were four others, which is crazy.
I think that might be okay. If this one is like canonized in a special way where you sort of overlook, I'm not saying the other ones are bad, I just haven't seen them. If people are like, you're in that third Home Alone, like, that would be really, that'd be fine with me, because I'm a purist myself. I know one, and I barely fuck with two. The lady covered in birds, I'm trying to have Christmas here.
And Trump was into that. Two got a lot of notoriety over the last few years because they were talking about editing him out of two, which that got a lot of more press to Home Alone 2.
Well, it's funny, the thing, he was in Home Alone 2. What I heard from someone recently was that to film at Trump Towers, where that was like his argument, his thing to get to let them use his building, was that he was like, I have to be in it.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm not surprised about that at all. Wow. And then my other thing, Jay, you touched on it a little bit, because you are, Pete, I imagine, not the norm, being religious, being like a super, known for being a super sweet, nice guy, etc. Not the norm for comedy, but in listening to a podcast you were on recently, which I have never heard this before, apparently you considered being a bad boy, untying your shoes. Leaving your shoes untied meant you were a bad boy.
Where did I say that?
You're on some podcast.
I meant that in second grade. I missed the simplicity of, like, if you were a bad boy, all you had to do is have a pencil that didn't have an eraser. Like, it was flat. Like, I'm writing for keepsies here. Or you don't tie your shoes. Or you, like, don't comb your hair. I like those days. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, especially when Jay and I knew each other, I was very, very, very Ned Flanders. And I think that was sweet and appropriate. It was sort of like being a Mormon. I think that's the easiest way to understand it, because so many people identify as Christian, but if you meet a Mormon, you really know they're a Mormon. Like, they're not drinking Coca-Cola. They're not. And that was actually really strangely good for me for a lot of reasons, because I didn't care about, first of all, I was married, so I wasn't focused on like trying to meet anybody. I was pretty much, I didn't start really drinking until after my divorce, understandably, is sort of when I got into it. So I like just wanted to talk about bits. I just wanted to like listen. I really was like a weird narrator guy. And I was surrounded by these pirates, and I just thought it was a hoot. It was like going on Pirates of the Caribbean for me. I was like, look at the way they talk to one another, and they're so mean, and it was just so foreign.
We said it on your talk show, but I always love it. It's like when you do something and you don't realize what a profound effect it's having on someone. It was when I would go get like cigarettes from those corner right by Ben's Pizza. There used to be like a little newsstand right there, and I'd be like just picking up like barely legal magazine, like thumbing through on the street.
You can't pick up barely legal magazine. You have to ask.
Oh yeah, yeah. Can I see that? Can I see that one?
You have to say, this is a true story. No, the new one. He said, okay, so this is important.
I already have January. Give me February.
That's what I'm saying. I'm at this time in my life, like everybody, I was occasionally looking at internet pornography. But unlike everybody, I was convinced that this was making God hate me and that I was going to hell. So I was wearing khakis and an orange polo and smiling and being nice. I don't regret that. What I wish I could take back was all of that self-flatulation,
sure.
Where I was just constantly, and that's what was good about it. I know we're supposed to learn these like, you know, profound lessons from nice people, but there's really nice lessons of self-love to be learned from pirates as well. And I know that sounds kind of loaded. I'm not calling you a pirate in a bad way, but I was so obsessed with not looking at pornography that it became part of the addiction. I had a therapist explain it where it was like looking at porn is like coke, and beating yourself up about it for 2 days afterwards is like heroin. It's the downer. So I'm basically doing a speedball. And then I'm watching Jay just be like, I'm a filthy animal. Let me look at barely legal. And then he flips through it and he decides not to. And I was just going like, wait, you can just let it be what it is? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right, that's fascinating.
Just,
yeah.
It can just be images of naked people that you sometimes look at to arouse yourself because you're a mammal and it's okay. Like, and I was going, my ex-wife actually said, if your attitude was more like Jay's, I wouldn't give a shit. Because, and this is one of the most embarrassing things I can admit, but there's millions of Christian people that can relate, unfortunately. I used to, like, tell my ex, like, I had a bad day today, like a confession, just because I was looking at, like, I would look at, like, the most innocuous, basically what we'd call soft core at this point, mm-hmm. because it was so hard with dial-up. You'd just be, like, bouncing boobies or whatever. But I would feel so bad. And then, the thing about comedians is they know themselves, and they would refuse. I remember when Dave Attell did my podcast, I asked him, do you love yourself? It's worth a listen just for this moment. And he laughs in my face. He can't believe that I love myself. He can't even fathom the notion of loving himself. But I call bullshit on that, because when you get up and you explore yourself and you share yourself and you do that work, and you're okay even with your shadow, that is an act of self-love, and can inspire. Isn't the Ned Flanders supposed to change the pirate? The pirate isn't supposed to change the Ned Flanders. Well, but I was like, that's some self-love.
Can I play
right
devil's
there.
Advocate for a sec, Jay? Could you think maybe possibly that being forced to abstain from watching porn they may have prevented an addiction that you might have had if you didn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe there was a part of your brain that if you were allowed to be completely into porn, it could have become a problem.
Are you saying that to me?
Yes, to you.
Oh, could my God. I actually think porn. Okay, so one of my favorite Oscar Wilde, I only have one favorite Oscar Wilde quote. But he says the only way to get rid of temptation is to yield to it. Now, he's being cheeky. He's being a dandy. He's joking. He's living at a time when obviously everybody was obsessed with being earnest and being proper and wearing like 9 coats. That's how hard it is to get naked. You're wearing 9 coats. That's basically what that is. I'm not going to have sex. I'm wearing 9 coats and 6
full
pairs
coverage,
of trousers.
Full coverage, one-piece pajamas underneath your clothes.
That's what it is. It's like, that's how hard it is for me to be naked. That's how much of a gentleman I am.
You have all that time to change your mind while you're getting naked, too.
Exactly. That's why you don't wear sweatpants in an office setting. So when he says that, he's joking. But what I take from that is all of that. And sorry to be this way, but this is Buddhism. It's attraction and aversion is a trap. So being averted to porn and being obsessed with being a good boy and not looking at pornography was actually trapping me way more than if I had just been like, sometimes I look at pornography and I masturbate and it's okay. So that was the addiction.
Right.
Eating was a ritual. The ritual for me was you'd look at it, you'd jerk off, then you'd cleanse the cache, you'd delete the history, you'd pray for forgiveness.
And then tell your wife about it, apparently.
And then that, sometimes I'd like to point out that sometimes I was smart enough to be like, she doesn't need to hear this. Like, but like, I was so, that's what hooks you. It's not just liking pornography. This is why, like, I've said this before, but affairs are a big part. I'm not Catholic. They have their own sort of sex problems. But in my church, the evangelical kind of circuit, you have a lot of affairs. You have a lot of closeted homosexuality and you have a lot of affairs. But the affairs, I'm like, no kidding. If you're going around preaching about how evil it is and posturing almost in a political way how fidelitous you are to your wife, and then you start counseling a woman, that has to be, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, in sort of like a Madame Bovary, Jane Austen sort of way, the hottest situation in the world.
Right.
Like, we can't do this. That's literally a Jane Austen novel. That's what's happening, and that's what gives it the juice.
You know, I was saying before, my ex-wife, like, she had met Pete a couple times coming out to the comedy clubs with me, and again, this is still Pete, like, you know, hyper religious and very quote unquote good boy, but was great for her meeting him the two times. It was the exact excuse for my complete, speaking of infidelities, was just like, why are you home at 3 a.m? And it was like, me and Pete had a conversation about the Lord's works.
Yeah, I was sort of fudging the punch for you because people would see that it was possible to do that job and be home by 10. You know, like you totally could. Like,
you totally could.
Yeah, you totally can. It wasn't helpful.
But Pete, I almost ask, in high, you know, so many years removed from it now, from your divorce, because I know that without giving it details, I don't know how much you've been public about it, but just like, you know, you were fucked over in that situation completely. Even after that, though, you said we started drinking there, but you did, you always found a, unless I don't know about a real dark time where, like, as far, not I'm talking about mentally, but I mean, like, as far as like activity, like you found like a balance, and it was interesting to see that. And I think, even though you never became what I would consider a dirty comic in any way, like, it was cool to watch, like, you were already killing on stage, being like squeaky clean, like, you just finding whatever your organic level of edginess was on stage. I thought that was so fun to watch.
I really appreciate that, Jay, because that is the word, right? Like, people like clean comics. Like, you get the sense that Brian Regan is being authentic. You know
sure.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, so Brian, the same Regan, with Nate. I think Nate also. Yeah. I think Nate, like, is organically, even though he curses and everything in his daily life and he's fun to laugh at stuff, it's not his own personal thing. His personal thing is relatively, like, observationally clean.
Absolutely. And the same with, you know, Seinfeld swears off stage too and stuff, but like, he likes that puzzle, and you get that sense. This guy loves the puzzle of a mm-hmm. clean joke. And that's Ryan Hamilton is another great example.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Ryan Hamilton swearing or being dirty. I really draw a distinction between swearing and being like ugly, like on
sure.
purpose. Like, you're trying to say something that's like shocking and sort of ugly. And that's the fun of it, or that's the thrill of it. I just wasn't being authentic because I just didn't think those colors were available to me. I couldn't paint with those colors. So then when my wife left me, she had an affair. She fell in love. And then they went off to be together. And then I was sort of left there really wondering, how could this happen? Because at this point in my life, I had this understanding of God that it was like paying the mafia, meaning if I'm a good boy, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't swear, I don't have sex. I have sex with my wife, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even like masturbating. Like, I feel really bad about that. So how did these hoodlums throw a brick through my bakery window? Like, how is this working? Like,
right.
I think a lot of people still have that idea of God. Like, it's transactional.
Did you find it hard to stay religious when that happened? Because everything was uprooted for you, but you're still religious now, right?
I wouldn't consider myself religious.
Spiritual,
I hate to,
maybe is a better word, but
there's,
you know,
no way to get around the phrase, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual.
Spiritual.
So let's just own it. Let's just own it. Although you could say that I enjoy religion. I think religious means going to church and practicing certain rituals and all that sort of stuff. And if you, like, did I baptize my daughter? No, I took her into the ocean. That's a spiritual person. That's a person. If you're having a quiet prayer with the universe and dunking your baby in the water off the Santa Monica Pier, that's, I'm Sting. I'm not Joel Osteen. I'm Sting. Because it doesn't count if it's outside.
Well, that
of a
situation
church.
Forced you to confront. That was, like, one of the biggest things. I mean, I assume you at that time, like, marriage was like, yes, this is forever. We'll get through problems. We'll get through whatever. And then you just found out, like, it's such a smack in the face of world's not fair, even if you do the right thing.
That's exactly what it was. And then, okay, so the gift, I love this conversation because we're talking about unlikely gifts. We're talking about unexpected grace. I don't even mean that in the spiritual sense. I'm just like, it's this gift that you don't deserve, that you don't expect. So I'm learning this lesson from Jay leafing through a pornographic magazine. What a surprise. But that really was... Like, my relationship with pornography was changed after that. I just got easy on myself. And then guess what? I wasn't that interested in it. You know what I mean? Like, it just became something that you could do. You're just a mammal looking at a flat image. And really, if you break it down, it's not the best thing in the world. It's not the coolest thing in the world. But it's not the worst thing either. So go easy on yourself. People are lonely. Life is hard. Stress is hard. Anyway... But when God, as I understood it, didn't hold up his end of the bargain, everything sort of blew up. I was like, well, I thought I was playing this game where I'll behave a certain way, and then God will literally open doors for me. I don't know what kind of, it's a young man's worldview, although a lot of people hold on to it for a very long time. And then when I realized all bets were sort of off, I started being more honest on stage, and that was an incredible gift. I didn't have to do what I had been doing with my parents, what I had been doing with my ex-wife, which was like doing an impression of a kind person. I was kind, but I really wanted you to know that I was a nice guy. I could get on stage and be like, I'm trying to think of the first bit that I did that was like dirty or sweary. But what started happening was anger would come out. Like, I didn't think it was polite to be angry. And I would start telling these stories that were like, that had like a, like some heat to them. Sure. And they would kill so much harder. And I literally found my voice. Like, yelling is funny for me. Like, I like yelling. I like swearing. I think it works for me. And that's why I called my most recent special is called Dirty Clean. It's because I can say fuck and shit and whatever. And afterwards, people will say, I love you. I love how clean you are. And I'm like, right. I don't understand. And that's when I really started to make the distinction. You can be clean and still be, meaning not swear, and still be very dirty if you're being clean and making, you know, painting certain images in people's minds. And you can be really dirty and still have people be like, that was clean. That was a clean show.
Do you feel like, because this is an interesting thing with like Kurt Metzger is such a good example of this too. He grew up Jehovah's Witness and was completely caged by his religion. So when he had his, whatever it was, like kind of awakening to like, oh, wait, what are my actual thoughts on this?
Yeah.
It was like so off the, you know, Kurt was like a guy like, yeah, let's do whatever drug is here and let's get hammered and let's go. You know what I mean? Because he was grew up like so, as I said, it really caged him. Like his whole existence, unless he was sneaking off to do something with friends or whatever, his whole existence was rooted in like religion and this and no birthdays and you don't celebrate these and Halloween's wow. Evil. These are like real things he had to grow up with. He had to knock on doors every weekend. And
Jesus, I didn't know that.
So you weren't as caged by it. So I'm asking, were you? Because it seems like when you kind of like got your like your head kind of cleared of a thing, and you're like, oh, wait a second. What is exactly I want to do here? Even like you said with the pornography, it still wasn't like, all right, man, time to just fucking fuck chicks and bullshit to them and just do it. You didn't like go like on a weird, right. Like, oh, you hear Pete's doing coke now? Like, right. none of those things like happened.
No, I wrote a book called Comedy, Sex, God. Those are the three topics, but it's also funny because it's called Comedy, Sex, God, or it's supposed to be. And I talked about this and I said that like my version of a bender was a normal person's Saturday night. And I'm grateful for that because I didn't want to go nuts and burn up years of my life or whatever. But the joke was like, I'd be out at some bar three, four in the morning and it would be packed. And I'd be looking around like, did your wives leave you too? Like, what are you guys doing here? But that was just a lifestyle that I wasn't used to. But the great thing is like, it was appropriate and it was fairly mild. I mean, for my own safety, it was fairly mild. I was 28 when my wife left me, which means my brain was fully formed. I was still, you know, I was still me. But then I realized, like, I remember realizing, like, wait, maybe I'll smoke pot. Like, like, I'll actually know what pot is. And I smoked pot for the first time when I was 28, and my brother brought it over. And it was a really, this is what I'm talking about, guys. I'm sorry to be so spiritual, not religious, but this is the unexpected love of like, of debauchery. Meaning, my brother came over to smoke me up. That's supposed to be my whole life. I was told that that was evil, that that was wrong, that it was illegal, and it was unhealthy, and this is your the temple of the Holy Spirit, and you're not supposed to do that. And it was... My brother and I got stoned and I took out my guitar and I played Ben Harper's Another Lonely Day and we both sang it And we both just like cried, stoned. And that was how we're from Boston. So we're like kind of repressed and we don't communicate the best. That's how he said, like, I'm sorry this is happening to you. And I love you and I'm here for you. And we were baked. And like, I did all the cliches. I ate peanut butter with my fingers. I locked myself in the bathroom. And then after a while, it was just like, I just want to go to bed. And I just went in my room and listened to Radiohead because it sounded amazing. And then I blew an audition the next day. I had an audition because nobody told me that pot hangovers are a thing. Like, you know, that kind of cobwebby feeling you can sometimes have, especially if you've gone 28 years without smoking and then you smoke like government grade psychosis weed with your brother. The next day I really fucked up an important audition. So I wish someone had told me that. But yeah, I hope that sort of gets at it, right?
You know, it's funny. I read a little bit of your book, or I rather audio listened to a little bit of your book. And one thing you said in the beginning that I never really thought about, but I'm sure you both can relate to this, is that being someone younger, when you were growing up and being in love of comedy, comedy was considered fringe, that it was like for weirdos. But yeah. I never thought of it that way. But I guess being someone that wants to be a comic at an early age, it is, you are a weirdo.
Well, I think what it is, like, you come into it, like, what you don't see, what you see on TV is, like, generally speaking, seasoned professionals who have been doing this for like a decade, you figure, mm-hmm. at least by the time you're seeing them on TV, even on like those shows like the A-List and Evening at the Improv. But when you get into like the bowels of it, when you first start and you're becoming a regular at open mics, that is where you see it. It's like, what drove you here? With everybody, it's something that drove them there.
Yeah.
Just like an odd situation completely. But you know, to what you were saying before, Pete, how like the world kind of like puts in your path, if possible, I feel like, you know, the things that kind of even you out. Because what's interesting, for all my porn and my comedy was always like dirty and leaned in that direction, more shocking. And then but I think some people are always so surprised, especially when on the road and fans come up and they're like, hey man, you want to do some coke? And I'm like, I'm afraid that you even have it on you. Like, I don't even mean like legally afraid. I'm just like, that's drugs, like for real. Yeah. Drugs. Yeah. And yeah, that seems like not. And I said, my thing was having my daughter at 24, for all the things I was on stage and conversationally, like it gave me a responsibility and something to even me out. So that's also, I really wasn't actually like, even if I was at the bars with everybody, I didn't drink. I never drank, and I still don't really drink with any regularity at all now, but like, I didn't even have situation. Like, I was probably drunk 5 times in my life, like 5 or 6 times in my life before me and my ex split up. And then like, I started kind of like going on the road and then not driving. I also drove every night. So like, when I was like living in the city and not driving, I was like, oh, we can get a little loose here. Yeah, and then my girlfriend has a drinking problem, so she had to stop. She had to stop completely. So then I was just kind of like, well, I guess I don't really drink now either.
Have you ever been one like home by yourself to have a drink? I'm home alone watching the game. I'm going to have a drink. Do you do that ever?
Yeah, I'm not really like sit back and watch the game with a beer.
Yeah, I never
diet,
do that
I'm
myself.
Diet peach Snapple iced tea. But yeah, you know,
that's my times. Problem, Jay. Your thing with food. Dude, I'm glad to get that. I love to say this on the record because Dan Soder, your homeboy, did my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was he hilarious, he told me about, is it Ken Wilton? Ken something. He wrote The Easy Way to Stop Drinking.
Oh, Alan Carr.
Alan Carr, not
Ken. Wow, not even close.
Yeah, I wasn't even close. I could try and do some gymnastics to tell you, Ralph, how I was close, but it's not going to work. they're both American names. But he told me, I didn't read that one. I ended up looking at that book and seeing other books that were recommended. And I ended up reading a book. I love recommending it. It's a great audiobook called This Naked Mind. And it's by Annie Grace. Great audiobook. And I literally listened to it. You have to have the desire to stop. Mm-hmm. You have to do all the AA kind of things. You have to realize like, this isn't helping me and all that stuff. But that book, if you have the desire, will stoke the flame. And literally by the end of it, I was like, well, that's it. I'm fucking done. So it's because of Dan that I stopped drinking. But maybe more interestingly, you guys, what you're saying right now makes no sense to the addict in me. I'm like, being drunk is fun.
Sure.
Being drunk is embarrassing, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be the guy that's like, I like you, Todd Barry, and lick his head. Go home and get drunk. Right? Yeah. So I would play video games and get drunk, which apparently is a big problem, by the way. It's like a big community.
Really?
There's so many like accepted... I hate all that mom wine culture stuff. I'm like, this is like, it's masking.
Right. Anybody that's drinking or doing any drug with any sort of regularity is not dealing with an issue. That's
fucking
really what
it is. Ralph, I don't like any of it. And but we know it's like mommy needs her medicine. That breaks my heart. Like,
oh yeah.
No one should need a substance just to get through. And I know I did too. So no judgment. There are a lot of coffee, and you can call bullshit on that. I'm just saying there's a special thing with alcohol where it really gets in your ear and whispers lies to you. That's my experience. But that was my thing. So my wife leaves, and the only thing that I was embarrassed with my wife, although I would occasionally do it, was that I love drinking alone. And when she left, I was just like, well, I'm just going to be – I did two things on my benders. One, I would drink alone. I figured out that I could drink a pint of vodka without having a hangover. That was my exact amount. I don't know. Is that impressive? I just was
for
like
me it is. These days I'm such a puss. I have two shots and I'm done at this point.
No? I was 28 and I had never really drank. So my liver was like, hey, it was like Jack LaLanne was my liver. So I was drinking not always a pint, but I knew that was my limit to not have a hangover. And then I would order from Chinese food restaurants that had numbers, like they were sequels. Kind of Chinese places that had bulletproof glass and would give you free grape sodas that you didn't ask for. This was all the stuff that I was too ashamed. And I would look at pornography without shame. And that's when I realized that, like, you kind of saw it more clearly what it actually was. And I actually think it might have been helpful. I mean, I was so lonely and so sad.
I was
going
to say, was it your first time living alone?
And I was the first time living alone. Yeah.
That's going to be a big... I've never experienced that. I, weirdly enough, never experienced just like bachelor pad living alone ever. I went from my mom's house to my ex-wife.
I've been experiencing it for 15 years, Jay. I've been experiencing it for 15 years.
I know you have. You are the exact opposite of that. You've never like lived with a girlfriend.
Well, I lived with someone for 6 years, but that was 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's something because like...
Go ahead.
Oh, so that's just something because like I couldn't imagine you now. Like, that's what... you know, Soder and his chick now, like, they stay together pretty much. They each have their own places still, respectively. But, like, they stay together a lot. And it's a very different thing, I think, to, like, watch somebody like gather. Someone who's used to, like, you know, like, not that you can't. I still play video games and stuff when Christine's home and, like, milling around. Because she'll go fuck around on her computer or do whatever. And it's not, like, a difficult thing. But, I mean, like, the idea of... anything you want anytime is weird, you know what I mean? If you're just like, I'm gonna watch a movie she has no interest in an apartment right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, you know, in a very small apartment. It is weird. I think transitioning into, if I ever get into a serious relationship where someone's around me, it's going to be a compromise. Obviously you have to give up a lot of that freedom that you can't do anymore.
I thought there was something really good to it because I went from, I had a mommy wife. My first wife was a mommy wife. And I'm not just saying this to be a nice guy. I really understand why she left. And I really do wish her very well. And she married, I Tarzan swung from my mom taking care of me to her taking care of me. And then when I was living alone, doing your own fucking laundry and doing your own dishes and having to take care of yourself, literally finding out what happens if you eat from, you know, Panda Express twice a day. Like, you find out. Don't have your wife be like, we should eat something healthy. You find out. Like, you feel that fucking shit and you do those dishes and you make the bed or whatever it is you need to do. Now that I'm married again, I do the dishes because I've been where you are, Ralph. I do them because I want to have a clean house.
Right. Like, I said, it makes me feel like an adult to have a clean house and do the laundry and food in the fridge. I feel like an adult male.
It's the opposite of what I think our fathers or maybe our grandfathers thought was being a man, but it's like, fucking be a grown up. Let's leave gender out of it. We want a clean house because we don't want to. I know I'm in a filth. This is my office. This is off limits, meaning it is a disaster. But in there, I like doing the dishes. There's no my wife being like, oh, he did the dishes. Of course I did the dishes. I live here too. These are my dishes. Like, we're going to do the dishes. And I got that from that time being alone. And I learned the consequences of like constantly drinking, but I needed to see. You need, like, that's all, that's what I'm about in a big way, is like experiential knowledge. I was abstaining from things and I didn't know why. Like now I know not to eat Chinese food three times a day or whatever it might be, because I experienced
it. And you know, also to learn to ask for the newest edition of the Barely Legal, so you don't have to go through that second.
I would never do that.
It's always funny. It's
maybe
almost...
if I just got off stage and I was really high on myself, I could maybe go in. You should put a heart monitor on me and see what happens if I go in and ask for a club magazine.
You know, being coddled in those situations does stunt you in a lot of ways also, because it sits in with my ex-wife has her own issues with food, so does my, you know, Christine does too. Ultimately it's like she's not heavy or anything, Christine, but she's you know, she has to fight it. But it's funny to think of all the times when how down I was and how much I hated, and it was reflective in so much of my actions more than personality, just being fat and not comfortable in my own skin and clothes and all that kind of stuff, which I still suffer with that, but I'm 70 pounds less than I was like at my heaviest now. And like,
are you
also
at your lowest right now, Jay, by the way?
I don't know. No, probably not my low, but I mean, not since quarantine. No, right. But I mean, I didn't like put on 50 pounds or anything during quarantine. I'm sure I just like, I went up and down like 10 pounds here and there, but either way, the point is, so it's again like getting that thing, that responsibility in your head to go like, I never thought, well, I was just sad about it, but never thought about it. And me and Dave Smith, especially when we were hanging together all the time, who's like he's a skinny guy. I used to always laugh with him because it took me years to realize. I'm like, how are me and Dave Smith eating the same things every day? We were together every day, pretty much hanging out, and we'd get Isabella from the school bus, and then we'd go to 7-Eleven and get a hot dog and some Doritos, and then we'd go into the city and do spots, and then we'd meet up and we'd eat mozzarella sticks at the Cellar and then get McDonald's on the way home. And I never thought, and I'm also going, why is Dave not fat and I'm fat? And then in the remembering, like everything coming clear, it's like a fight Fight Club when he realizes that he was in all those things and there was no Tyler Durden. I'm like, oh, this makes sense. The thing is, me and Dave would get like, you know, let's say we got the same thing, like two burgers and a 10-piece nuggets and some fries. We'll say we both got that. It's like when it's all done, Dave still has half his fries left. He's got like at least half a burger left, and all those things. So not only is he not finishing his food, he's leaving. And then I would always go, remembering this and being like, wow, I didn't even think about it. I was like, all right, you done, dude? I'm going to throw this stuff away. And it's like eating the rest of his burger on the way to the trash can. Yeah, and you're like, yeah, I guess that is why Dave stayed skinny and I just continued to gain weight. You have to like see it. So it's like now, again, you see being thoughtful of it when you're being younger and going like, who cares about dishes? Who cares? I would leave a dish in my bedroom overnight when I was a teenager. You never thought, I couldn't even, now all I think about is I'm like, that's going to bring bugs. It's gross. Yeah. What are you doing? Yeah,
we got to take care of this. Okay, this is why I actually think sobriety or recognizing any addiction, and your addiction can actually be to your own way of thinking. It doesn't have to be a substance. But that's what's artistic and beautiful and helpful to a comedian, too. You think of a comedian, we're supposed to be Captain Jack Sparrow and all this stuff. I actually think the more you can look at yourself and report back on it, it's really helpful to go like, oh shit, I was eating the burger on the way. That's funny. That's like a bit. That's like a great scene, like you said, in a movie, but it's going to be relatable when you can, all sobriety is going, how is my brain lying to me? And that's really funny.
What you have to notice is you have an obsession with pirates. You just said Captain Jack Sparrow. You called Jay a pirate earlier. Something about pirates are a big thing for you.
And I'm a waiter at Long John Silver's. That's who I was. I was never
Jay, I know you have to leave soon. I want to run through a couple of quick things and we'll do the first.
Sure.
Is that cool?
Sure.
I don't want to make you late. Before we go any further, if you are over 21 and you're a fan of the show, and it'd be weird if you were like 13 and a fan of the show, but if you're over 21, we've got some good news for you. If you want to stock up on some top shelf CBD flower, and of course you do, that it looks like, you know, weed, but it's made of CBD. Why? Because you can rock these delicious tasting joints all day and never get high. This is straight weed, bud, herb, flower, no THC. So everything you like about smoking a joint without getting high. All the benefits of CBD, the stuff you hear all the time, that it's good for inflammation, it's good to relax you, all that stuff, but you don't get high. Just really good quality CBD flower. All the benefits of CBD by smoking it. And right now, if you go to HempireDirect.com, where you can get an eighth of high-quality CBD bud for just $20 or a quarter for $30, it's incredible pricing. Once again, HempireDirect, HempireDirect.com. You can get an eighth of high-quality CBD bud for just $20 or a quarter for $30. Incredible pricing. They got some Grape Bait, Blue Dream, Sour Runts, all the stuff you love. It's all at HempireDirect.com. And if you use the code GASFLOWER, that's right, GASFLOWER at HempireDirect.com, your first order, 50% off. 50% off. That means a full quarter for just $15. Crazy fucking deal. Go to HempireDirect.com. Use the code GASFLOWER. Get 50% off your first order. Stock up on that first order because it's only good for the first order. There's a link in our description as well if you don't want to write this down because you're driving or whatnot. But it's just a great, great deal for all of our fans of CBD on the network. HempireDirect.com. All right, let's get back into it. A couple of things. I know you had a comedy tour book for 2020 that got obviously put on hold, Pete. Are you looking to do it this year? You're just waiting till the world reopens, or have you booked any dates yet, or what?
My stand-up tour? Funny. I don't know. Who was I talking to? Somebody did my podcast where we both like were talking about how we pretend to miss it. Like, because stand-ups are so cutthroat about this specifically, and I've been guilty of this too. I'm always like, look, your other jobs, those are like your mistresses, but stand-up is your wife. Never leave your wife. Like, you got to stay good and stay sharp. My fantasy now, I miss doing Largo. I do a monthly show out here in LA at Largo. I sincerely miss that. I miss performing at the store. The Comedy Store is as close as we have to the Cellar. It's like a community and good crowds like that. I miss that very much. But like the time, like when I flew for Home Alone, I was on that plane and I hadn't been on a plane in a long time. And I'm 41 and you feel what it's doing to your body and you're just like, fuck this. Like, fuck this. So I was just thinking about it. Yesterday, I was like, I still like, if I'm going to tape an hour, you have to take it out. You have to do reps. But like, I'm like Boston, New York, Austin, Portland, Seattle, Chicago. That might be it. Like, I'm out of here. And San Francisco. And then just do it in LA. One of the great things about LA is there's almost like a Midwestern component where you can drive. I don't mean this in a bad way. I like the Midwest. You can drive to the Brea Improv.
Yeah, Ontario.
And you'll find out how your jokes will play in Peoria. You know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty regular kind of place to make sure you're not being too much of a hipster or anything. So
that's funny that what you say about like pretending to miss it, though. It is funny because I what I do miss is the actual, again, you know, it's like if we could teleport to like a half hour before the show in whatever city it is and do the shows and then, you know, teleport back out. That's what's great. It's again, like I do miss the comedy, but man, if I'm doing like I'm doing maybe like a week in a month lately or so. And a few of them have been flying. And I mean, my schedule was so like Monday we do Bonfire and Legion of Skanks, Tuesday Bonfire, and I do stand up that night in the city, Wednesday Bonfire, and then this show, SDR show. And then I come home, I pack my suitcase, and Thursday morning I'm on an airplane to go to some city, Friday morning press, do the show Thursday, Friday, Saturday, fly home Sunday. That's my night. That was my cheat day eating wise. And me and Christine would sit and just smoke pot and watch TV and whatever. And somewhere in there, be a father. But that was...
a season with fatherhood.
Yeah, season with fatherhood.
Sprinkled.
That was... And it was tough. It was, like, you know, treacherous at times as far as, like, feeling like your health and exactly flying. Like, what it does to your body, flying is...
Also, Jay, I couldn't... Especially since I stopped drinking, I couldn't do the second show Saturday and not order every dessert on the menu. The stress that we undergo... I'm not trying to be a sob story for stand-ups, but it's not free. When I do two shows on Saturday, for the next 48 hours, I'm going to be analyzing them. That's where the trims come from. That's where the tags come from. from. You're doing it subconsciously, and it's a burden. And this is why we want to get drunk, or we want to get stoned, or in my case, you maybe get stoned and definitely eat, because your brain can't shut the fuck up. It's not free. So
and it's
of
also,
course there's addiction in what we do.
And it's also why, you know, rock stars tend, like, you'd almost be surprised, a performer, you have that kind of thing where it's like, why would a performer go out and do a show, and then it's announced there's the after party at this club, and they go, and it's because one of the weirdest feelings in the world is, especially when you build a fan base, which you have 2P, and you do some version of meet and greet, and you just meet these people who are everything from wearing t-shirts to have tattoos from the podcast to all these different things they love, and then it's just you know, especially if you're not like fucking on the road and stuff, then you're back in a hotel room and just
the
like
quietest
any,
place.
Like any other yeah. schmo, you're just in like, you know, slides and socks picking out, like, I'm looking at the back of labels for Kind bars in the marketplace in the hotel. Like, 260 calories. I thought this was healthy. And you know, and you're gonna go upstairs and I'm gonna lay on my belly on my bed and watch a movie on my MacBook. You know what I mean? Like, it's so like
I would tell
it's
them
a weird,
on the road.
It's a weird emotional thing. It's something even with the said with the flying and everything to lump that all in. Like, except for the performing, like being at the airport, I don't miss any. So now when I have it coming up like once a month, it's like
special.
Everything, no, not even special. I'm saying more like leading up to it. Like you said, we're pretending to miss it. There's that thing where you're like, I'd be A-okay if they called me right now and said, oh, we got to cancel those shows. I'm like, darn.
Well, dude, I was in Cleveland when the pandemic was announced, like when it sort of happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there on a Wednesday. First show was Thursday, but I didn't want to miss it. So I came, like, the flights were funky, so I had to come in on Wednesday. My opener was coming in on Thursday. And I was calling her, to Lara Bites, who's hilarious, and I was telling her not to come because I'm like, it looks like it's going to get canceled. And that was sad, but there was another voice in my head that was like, I could use about 6 months off.
You caused the pandemic in a way.
I think you willed it to God.
You cashed in your favor. A couple other quick things. Did you ever record your ode, your homage to New Kids on the Block called Old Farts on the Street? Did you ever record it?
I did when I was a kid. I remember their album was called Hangin' Tough. Ours was called Swinging Week. I mean, Weird Al, eat your heart out. That goes back to how comedy was fringe, like parody songs. This is what I thought you were supposed to be doing.
And also, I noticed you started renumbering your show. Is that because you made it weird because you started doing it with your wife? You started from one again? Is that what you did with your podcast?
Oh, thank you, Ralph. Thanks for asking. We started, our show comes out on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So You Made It Weird is in the 400s now. And then on Friday is We Made It Weird. That's me and Val do a special edition on Friday. And those are, I think we're on 23 of them.
Right.
So that's why that has a low number.
Okay, so just it's through the same RSS feed, but a different show. Okay.
We could have done it as a different show, but we didn't know we would like it so much.
Okay. I don't know if he'll plug it himself either, but just to go back through archives, if Pete, if you're listening, the Batman stuff, the stuff that you and Matt...
Oh, I have that. Your Batman stuff was the stuff that my you first and Matt, introduction to you. It was my Matt favorite McCoy, thing in the world.
That and the doctors, the bad doctor.
Oh, my God. 23rd and 7th. You know that Radio Shack at 23rd? You probably don't, but there's a Radio Shack at 23rd and 7th. And right above it, there's a brow waxing place. And then above that was our old office. And this was our comedy office. And at a time, I shared it with Matt. And that's where we made it look like a doctor's office.
Yeah.
And then Mulaney came through for a couple years. It was like this really...
What was the company? What was it?
It was just a bunch of stand-ups sharing an office. Because office space at that time, I'm sure it's still much cheaper than an apartment. It was nicer
now
than
especially.
My apartment. We had a couch in there that I would sleep on. Me, Baron Vaughn, Mulaney, Brian Sacca, all these guys. It was like $125 a month. To have a Chelsea apartment, basically.
Yeah.
No shower or anything. But you'd sleep there if you had an early flight and all these things. It was great. But that's where we filmed the doctors. But I'm so glad you like the Batman things. Those are some of my favorite things to do, which is saying a lot because that suit is incredibly uncomfortable.
She is.
And I would sweat out like 4 or 5 pounds. And they always shot. I didn't even know this. I was new to shooting stuff, but they would shoot my coverage last, like which means would be shooting everybody's reactions to me riffing. So I'm riffing and we're not even filming it. And then at like 3-4 in the morning, we're turning the cameras around to get me. And that's part of why it's so funny, is because I'm losing my mind. Yeah. Every single thing that's like iconic or quoted or tattooed from those sketches is because it was 4 in the morning and I was dehydrated and my mascara is running and I'm just losing my mind and yelling Dr. Fishy no or whatever it is.
Also, the little tidbits was that it's pretty cool that your brother apparently does rap beats. That's so weird if he's as white as you. Is that a thing that he makes a living out of or just something he wants to do?
That's a good question. I think he certainly has made money from it. His name is Dr. Holmes 33, I think. Okay. He loves Illuminati. It's like anytime I try to connect with my brother on hip hop, he typically doesn't like who I like. He really loves underground. He likes the local shit, the really hard stuff. So it's not like, you know, we used to like the same stuff, but now he really likes underground stuff. So his beats are kind of like scary to me. A lot of like strings and like doors creaking and stuff. It freaks me out. But they're very good. And that is a weird thing about my brother.
Yeah, it's very, so we're going to do the first, Shannon, okay?
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit.
The name of the show, as you know, Pete, is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I have a feeling this is going to be the most boring answers of all time, which will be exciting. We ask our guests every time their first experience with all three. So we mean the first concert you ever went to, the first drug you ever did after pot, unless pot's the worst drug you ever did, and your first time having sex. We start with concert. Do you remember the first concert you ever went to on your own volition?
I think I'm going to surprise you here. I think I'm going to surprise you with all three.
You didn't even know.
If you had read all of the book, there's way more interesting sex questions.
I didn't get into the book, as I said.
You're going to get into the middle of that book and be like, fuck. JK, if you're like me, you're never going to read my book again. The guest is done. It's on to the next guest book.
No, you're in my phone, so I listen when I... Ralph, I run every now. Other day, and I love listening to books. So you're in my book. What'd you say, Jay? You made fun of me, I'm sure.
I said Ralph runs now, so he listens to audiobooks.
Yeah, I do 20
it's
miles a week.
It's not always an attack, so Ralph.
It's always an attack, Jay.
Ralph is handsome, fit Joe DeRosa.
Pete also said I had a beautiful voice. I'm falling in love with Pete.
He does have a beautiful voice. That was off mic. You always got to roll, record right from the beginning.
Recording. Don't worry about it.
Good. My first concerts, I was really into punk rock. So you don't, when you don't have a vocabulary for suffering, anger, frustration, I'll answer short, I promise. So I was going to church, but on Saturdays and Sundays, I was going to all ages shows and like really getting into it. I had the jacket. I basically dressed like Jay's alter ego, like a harder core Jay.
You were in a punk band too. Weren't you in a punk band at some point?
I was in a punk band called Nude. I was screaming in the garage. And then on Sunday, I'm singing Shine, Jesus, Shine. Something was not adding up inside. You know, there was conflict in my house growing up. That's not code for anything horrible. They don't really get along. And I needed to let this stuff out. So I would go and see The Casualties. I'd see Showcase Showdown. And then I got really into Rancid. So I think that would be the first band that you guys would know. Mm-hmm. I would go and see Rancid whenever I could. And those shows, as they got more popular, started getting more populated with like jocks and really aggressive sort of like Proud Boy types. And they got less fun. But when I saw Rancid at the Avalon in probably 1995, I was kind of a late bloomer.
It's funny, the punk's music, like much like Marilyn Manson, it doesn't age. The people don't age well in it. So trying to be punk, as Christine's going to see, she's from Hermosa Beach, so she's Pennywise and all that stuff. You know, not the Dead Milkmen, but was it Bad Religion, things like that. Mm-hmm. But like...
Yep.
When she'll go to the concerts and take pictures and show me, I'm like, it looks like three grandfathers on stage doing punk music.
We were doing an interview with someone on the show recently. I forget who it was now, but I was looking him up, and he was on a show with this guy that looked like somebody's grandfather, and it was the dude from the Sex Pistols. So like, oh my God, did he age weird.
Well, that's really old. Yeah. I did. Tim Armstrong is the lead singer of Rancid, and it was one of the thrills of my career is that I did his radio show. and he had a guitar, and I played him nude songs.
Oh, wow. That's so
and
cool.
And he sang along, and it was like, this is fucking trippy.
Cool. That's so
I got
cool.
If I was in my living room right now, we have hanging on the wall, I got Christine for, I think it was her birthday last year, I got her the Tim Armstrong Hellcat acoustic guitar. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
He's still great. When what he's producing and doing now is still great. I still like Rancid. I usually listen to them when I'm visiting home and those feelings start coming back up.
Yeah.
And
what about the first? I don't mean to move it along, but I know Jay has to leave soon. Your first time having sex.
Well, I had sex.
Oh, wait, sorry. I skipped one.
You skipped
the drug dealer did after weed. I'm sorry.
Well, that's a long story. And that's a big part of the book is when I was 28, I smoked weed for the first time. It didn't grab me, meaning I didn't become like a habitual smoker or anything. I liked it, but I didn't like that it made me foggy. And then when I was 30 or maybe 31, I went to Bonnaroo and took mushrooms, and that changed my life. And that's what I was sort of getting at when I was talking about experiential knowledge. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to get sort of religious-y, but like that's what mysticism is. Religion is sort of like reading about other people's religious experiences. Mysticism is having your own spiritual experiences. And I would put what kids are doing at a Tool concert up with a good mystical experience, because anybody that's taken psychedelics knows the fundamental cornerstone of any good mystic is we don't have any idea what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
So there's an awareness inside of you. And what happens with mushrooms and what happened on my first trip is that awareness device, that searchlight that was shining out of our eyes is manipulated. And then you become aware of it. You're aware of something being aware inside of you. So whenever I tell people I had a mystical experience on mushrooms, they're like, that's weird. I just saw a clown and he, you know, hit me with his dick or whatever. I'm like, it's not what you see. It's that you see that you're seeing with something.
Yeah,
you right. recognize that, you know, something divine is sparking inside of you.
What I like about you'd quantify as mysticism over religion is just saying, oh, we know everything and this is what you need to do. And yeah. every problem in the world could probably be boiled down to money, religion, or land. And yeah. that's what I hate about religion. And yeah. I think the thing about being mystic is understanding, oh, we don't know anything. And just trying to figure out how you fit in this universe and how that can exist is all that really matters.
Religion is just too boiled down to like the obvious. I think it's like with great wording, it's basically like, don't hit people. Don't be mean. Don't fuck a wife. Don't fuck someone else's wife.
Back when there were no rules, it makes sense. Oh, if you kill people.
No, it's government. That's what I said. Yeah, it was a government to give people to be afraid of something.
Well, our society is built on the back of the Ten Commandments. You're talking about like sort of the first part of it. Later, and this is the one spiritual sort of point I'll make. It's not being nice just to be nice. That's what religion was for me. It's like, be nice, and then you're in the club. If you're smiley and you're nice, you look like Jesus lives in your heart.
Right.
But if I'm nice to you, Jay, because I recognize that the awareness that's looking out my eyes is the same awareness looking out your eyes, that's the birthing place of true compassion, understanding, and a real love. Jesus never said, like your neighbor. He wants you to love your neighbor. And you can't love your neighbor when they're assholes or they're dicks or they're just not your cup of tea. But you can love anybody when you recognize the impersonal and abundant nature of awareness itself. That's what conversion is not believing in your head Jesus is the only God or whatever it might be. It's actually reframing how you interpret and participate in reality as one thing. That's what atonement is, at one mint.
Definitely sounds like this came from a mushroom experience. So
dude. And that's the sort of stuff that makes sense on mushroom. Right. You know what I mean? Like, you can say it, but when it's in your bones and you're like, holy fuck, me and this tree are having a really intense relationship right now.
Now, Ralph, as a high priest in the Church of Satan, where do you fall on all this?
Well, let me consult the manuals and I'll get back to you.
Let me see what Baphomet thinks of this.
Now, your first time having sex, I imagine, was with your first wife.
Yes, but it was before we got married. And
that is the
squarest, not square thing in the world. Is she was not a virgin. She wanted to have sex. I didn't want to have sex. And then I went to Ireland on this trip, And for some reason, I had this profound like epiphany where I was like, we should just have sex. I called her from a like one of those red phone booths, so lame, and I was like, we should have sex. Start taking the pill. So she started taking the pill. I was so uptight, and maybe rightly so, that the pill doesn't take effect until you've been taking it for 30 days. So we waited until she had been taking it for 30 days. And then we had sex, and I've told the story many times. I only made it 6 pumps, and I'm counting in as 1 and out as 2. So that's 3 pumps.
3.
And I could only do that if you've been told your whole life that you go to hell for having sex or that it's evil. You can't just flip a switch and be like, okay, you can't tell your boner it's okay. So we had a terrible session. Then we went to like Applebee's, and I had like 2 sour apple martinis, and we tried again. I don't know if it ever got good. Like I had to clean out my psychology to realize what I believe now, that sexuality and healthy sexuality can be a very beautiful and spiritual thing.
The first time that you said to yourself you just had sex and enjoyed it without any preconceived guilt concept, you know what I'm saying? Like just like your first time having an enjoyable sex experience with no guilt and no issue behind it.
With you, Pete, because I know your girlfriend, I know you dated Jamie afterwards for a while.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, did you get to experience it all in being single? Like just going on the road and like one night stand things, just some fun, without guilt, just going like, oh, that was fun. It was two people who enjoyed each other and had a good night.
For a year. And that's again, we're back to you flipping through the club magazine. For about a year, when I was single on the road, I had just gotten out of a kind of an emotionally rough relationship, not Jamie. And I realized I was codependent and I was addicted to cohabitating and just having a girlfriend. I actually thought it was kind of impolite to be single. I thought it was embarrassing to be single. So I was at least smart enough to diagnose that. And I was like, be single for a year. And then I would go on the road and I had casual sex and it was incredibly, incredibly therapeutic. And I always thought it was like dark or gross. It was filled with laughs and bits and like ordering room service. It was always kind of gentle. It didn't have to be ugly or gross. And to have sex with somebody and they know you're in Portland or whatever, you know, it's just for the fun of it. And to see that you can just kind of two consenting people can have fun with each other and even, you know, almost pretend like you love each other. I know that's a weird thing to say.
But you're right. That's what it is. Like that night, it's like a passionate, like it's like the.
That's why there's Bob Seger songs and Dave Matthews songs. I sort of started to understand that. It's like, let's I don't want to say use, but let's incubate one another because life is hard and life is lonely and this is exciting. And it would always have like, you know, at this point I was staying in nicer hotels, so it would almost always have like nice food and stuff. And it wasn't just the sex that I remember. When I think back to that, I think about like smoking cigarettes
and the dumpling and
talking like, and like I remember this is what I thought we were because it's the Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll podcast. I had three ways as well, which is so strange. I know I look like a guy who it's strange that you've had a two way, but I would have some three ways. And I told Mulaney about it. And Mulaney was also
two girls and you, or you a guy and a girl, or both?
I don't do the devil's three. I'm just kidding. That's an old joke. It was always two women. And I remember telling Mulaney about it. And he grew up with similar baggage around sex. And he said something that really made it, because those nights were lovely. And not just because it was a three-way. There was some extreme novelty to it. But it was really, Mulaney put it best. He goes, it's sex with a witness. Not only are you having sex with somebody, but there's someone else there telling my psychology, this is okay. Like, you're not a bad boy. Everyone is enjoying it. You know what I mean? And that is, we're back at unexpected gifts. Like, you don't expect to learn like a loving or a healing lesson from a three-way. But I did. I really remember those nights.
I'm going to try and learn that lesson this weekend, if you don't mind.
Did you find, Pete, because I've never seen you in those situations at all, but I'm curious.
That'd be
with
cool
like,
if you did, though.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot of my friends do a lot of weird things. But no, I'm saying more like, are you, did you learn how to become like the aggressor ever in a situation? Like, I still find, even when I hook up on the road at all, or when I have hooked up historically, I mean, I've got stories where it's like, I've gotten laid, but it happened at 7 in the morning. We got back to the room at 3 in the morning, but like, I don't know for sure that she's not like winging it at me sideways. So it's like, hey, do you want to watch everything I've ever enjoyed on YouTube? And then do you want to, you know, it's like, until they finally go like, hey, the sun's coming up. Are we going to fuck or what? And you're like, oh, yes. I was waiting for you to say that all
also,
night.
Also, UJ so. Still to this day will put it on Christine a lot to make it happen.
Put it on Christine all the time. If it's a threesome thing, yeah, for sure. I'm like, by the way, the good and the bad. I'm like, you know, I go, yeah, Christine really wants you to come back with us or whatever. But then like, if it doesn't work out, I go, I guess they hated Christine. Yeah, maybe they really love
you. We got to wrap, Jay. So we'll go around doing plugs. We'll start with you, Peter. Peter, no one calls you Peter. I guess.
Peter.
Want to answer your question and say that I learned to kind of figure out the appropriate way to just be honest.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I would try and be like so Jack McBrayer that it was actually kind of easy. And at a certain point, it didn't work all the time. One of my favorite stories on the podcast is I just summoned my inner Don Draper and was just like, I got to tell you, I'm going to be really disappointed if we don't hook up tonight. And she did not see it going that way. I was misreading the signals. And, you know, there were some humiliations there. It's a vulnerable thing to put yourself
out there.
But in my experience, especially with things like a three-way, it always came down to someone has to say it. Someone has to say it. It's my intention that the three of us go home right now. And if you can do it, I would try never to be super drunk or anything like that. Clear earlier in the night. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's a big thing. That's a big thing of it,
be
too.
Better than this. Like, it's true. Let's not get drunk. Let's go actually do something. Let's have fun.
It is a big thing of it, too. As a Christine, when she drank, was all over it, get it to happen. Now, it's not that she doesn't want it any less. It's just now it's like, Christine, that girl's like talking to us. Like, you should go. Like feel it out, and she's like, people are here and they're looking, and I'm like, that's oh, so this is what the drinking took away.
That's funny. I bet it did for me too, because I think back on those, even with my when I met my wife, we met on the road. It's one of those incredible stories where we stayed in touch and we ended up falling in love. But like we tell the story differently, but I remember very vividly that I was like, it's my intention to take you home tonight. And she remembers that it was her idea. So like we can't even get that straight.
And so the book is called Comedy Sex God. It came out last year, the year before it's out. Now your tour is on hold. Your podcast, You Made It Weird and We Made It Weird, comes out each week. Anything else that we are leaving off the plug list besides you being in the new Home Alone movie that you can't do?
No, that's about it. It really means a lot. The podcast is sort of my one of my favorite things because it's so unfiltered and so passionate. The reason the book is called Comedy, Sex, and God is because the podcast, we talk about comedy, we talk about sex, and we talk about God. The God portion has bled into it. So I will say, if you're interested in a very human and non-religious discussion of what the fuck we're doing here, Ralph, Jay, Shannon, we're floating in infinity right now, and we are aware, and there's squid that are aware and fish that are aware, and the air is made of the same things you're made of. It's all molecules, and nothing makes sense. And I really, you know, look down on the fact that religion has made it so square and so judgy and ugly to ask those questions. And I wanted to have a safe place where it could be like, let's start with atheist. I'm sure you're an atheist. Let's go
agnostic.
Deeper.
I'm agnostic. I think atheist is weird. To be an atheist is a strange thing. It's also, not to get into this, but I have another podcast that's health and wellness, and we get into this a lot. But, you know, Charles Darwin said that when we could look at the world microscopically, all the answers of the universe would be solved. And boy, was he wrong, because it opened up nothing but the unknown a thousandfold.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Jay, your plugs, please, sir.
Listen to You Made It Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Jay, I'm sorry to be cut, but I know Jay's got to get on the road anyway.
So. BigJComedy.com for all my dates. Bonfire coming back real soon, hopefully as soon as next week.
Wow, good for you, Jay.
We should be back, so on Sirius XM. And Legion of Skanks right here on the Gas Digital Network. Six and Jump on Patreon. Me, Ari Shaffir, Dan Soder going through individually every episode of 21 Jump Street.
When is my season up, Jay? When am I on?
Yeah, we're episode three of season three right now. Booker,
so I still
just
got
introduced.
Another whole season.
I'll
right?
tell you what. And when I look back in hindsight, I gotta say, seeing this now, Johnny Depp, they brought in Richard Grieco to put a fire under Johnny Depp's ass, and yeah. Johnny Depp at that age makes Richard Grieco look like a pig. I mean, just a piece of garbage.
Yeah,
he was
so,
goddamn handsome. Yeah. And Richard Grieco looks ridiculous.
Yeah, he still looks ridiculous now. Yeah. Shannon, your plugs.
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Pete, do you believe in ghosts? I'm guessing the answer is no. Do you believe in ghosts, Pete?
I've never seen a... Well, I believe that the ghost of my mom's cat jumps on the bed when I go to bed. When I used to sleep at my mom's house when I would visit Boston, every morning I would wake up to Clem, who's been dead for a long time, not only jumping on the bed, but curling up and laying. So, I mean, I felt its heat and its weight. And of course, when I looked, there would be nothing there.
I thought you were saying also peed in the bed. It was your excuse to hide out the fact that you're pissing the bed.
Which is a good cover because I piss hot, dirty kitty litter pee. Like just green. It's almost like stinky pee.
Follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other show, as I mentioned, the Good Sugar Podcast, comes out every Monday. Before we wrap, and I want to say thank you so much, Pete. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Me too,
I want to
ask
Jay, did you know that you had such an effect on Pete's life already, or was this discovery?
No, we've talked about it over the years now. So yeah, that was the basis of the character he put me in on Crashing. So yeah, but it's funny. No, but at the time, no, we got along. I said I never picked friends. I used to eat a lot of shit for this actually, like from comics like Patrice and like the older guys, even though they didn't realize they had done this with me. And kind of like ingratiating me into their world and bringing me to that table and backing me when I had a chance to go up. When I would do that, I kind of gained a lot of shit because they go, well, you're not even fully in yet, and you're already trying to bring all these people in. But if I thought people were funny, Dave, Lewis, Metzger kind of came up with me, but he was a hard pill for people to swallow right away. Bargatze, all these people that I just thought were really funny. So I'm like, yeah, let's go. It's like, hang, and these people should know about you.
It's funny, Jay. It never even occurred to me that it was because you thought I was funny. I thought it was just because I was next to you.
No. I just fucking, I said, I remember the first time I watched you, like your set from front to back was one of those Dylan shows at Lewis's thing. And it was and he brought in, you know, they direct to sell or direct to buy or sold those tickets. So it's basically the people that would be willing to buy a ticket from Lewis with his lip ring and you know his bag of degenerates that he would have selling tickets for him. It was that audience, and Pete would go up there. Like same thing with Nate. Nate had that same ability that was very impressive. Interesting, you guys worked together in Chicago for years before you came to New York, because you both had that thing where it's like the funny was enough that no one realized they're watching clean. If they were brought up like he usually does church shows, but he's here tonight, like the crowd might not give you, but when they came in open-minded to this is just a comic, it's very quickly and you and Nate, I think it's a skill that I admire so much. You don't realize they're being clean, it's just funny. That's impressive.
It's funny. Bill Burr told me something similar about, I was like, how do you do those black rooms? It seems so scary to me to work that circuit. And he was like, comedy is about being the different thing. So you go up and you're this pale redhead guy, everybody's interested. And it was so weird to be clean made you like special in this other way. Like you, even if they never identified it, it was like, oh, something different is happening. And that was always good.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for taking the time out. We add a song every week to our playlist, thestrshow.com/playlist. Just because we brought them up, we'll add Ruby Soho from Rancid. Seems like the right song to play. Thank you so much, Pete, for taking time out. And we'll see you next week on the SDR Show. Peace.
Destination, now, Ruby, 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 Soho. Destination. listening to the SDR Show.